The headlines this hour. The British police come under fire for the arrest of dozens of people, including members of an anti-monarchy group, on the day of coronation of King Charles. Russia says Ukraine has launched more than 10 drones on the Crimean Peninsula, as Kiev reports widespread Russian drone strikes. And the Israeli military's blockade of the occupied West Bank city of Ariha enters its third week. Thanks for joining us. The UK police have drawn condemnations for the arrest of dozens of people on the day of coronation of King Charles. Several British lawmakers and human rights groups have criticized the police approach. It came after police forces detained more than 50 people, including leading members of the anti-monarchy group Republic, in London. Rights groups have labeled the arrest incredibly alarming and a dangerous precedent. According to the police, the people were held for alleged affray, public order offenses, and breach of peace. The arrest came days after the government granted new anti-protest powers to the police forces.
Britain now has a new king. At the first coronation the world has seen in 70 years, the Archbishop of Canterbury crowned British royals Charles and Camilla at Westminster Abbey on Saturday, ushering in the reign of King Charles III. The main focus of British state media was the splendour and grandeur of the spectacle. However, controversy still surrounded the day. Anti-monarchy activists belonging to the Peaceful Not My King protest movement were rounded up and arrested ahead of the coronation. The arrests included group leaders.
It's a completely peaceful demonstration. The police, without telling us why, without telling us where they're taking them, have arrested all of our lead organisers. They've seized all our placards. It feels like something out of a police state, because we still don't know why anyone's been arrested, and we still don't know where they're taking our people. You know, Britain's meant to be a democracy, but Charles isn't treating it like one.
Even before the event took place, criticism of the royal family remained relatively widespread. A survey by the National Centre for Social Research showed public support for the monarchy has fallen to a historic low. A total of 45% of respondents said either it should be abolished, was not at all important, or not very important. Young people particularly expressed embarrassment over the institution's continued existence. Elsewhere, similar polling revealed that many of the King's subjects across the Commonwealth would vote to remove the UK monarch as their head of state, raising speculation that more nations will ditch the Commonwealth in the near future. The ongoing cost of living crisis, undemocratic power, and seemingly endless scandals are among the many reasons experts believe the UK royals' popularity has plummeted.
I don't think anyone can be happy, especially looking at the economic state right now. Well, you only have to go out in the streets and some of the famous streets in London and look how many people are suffering and sleeping on the streets. And that is quite embarrassing and appalling for any sort of government, let alone a monarchy, to be proud to celebrate and spend that amount of money when people are suffering.
Why there are many mainstream platforms. So what the royal family stand for today might be different, but it's very, very difficult to erase history. And they have to respect that a large portion of the public still connect them to, let's say, some incredibly sad, vicious and violent times.
The new monarch now faces many challenges, and they're not just including the social, economic and political crises which plague the nation, but also the deep divisions within his own family as well. Depending on how the king handles these many crises, could heavily impact the fight for survival that the royal institution now finds itself in. Robert Carter, Windsor.
There seems to be no end in sight for the war in Ukraine, as Kiev and Moscow launch new drone attacks against each other. The cities of Sevastopol and Crimea were targeted by 10 drone strikes. Russia has several air bases in the area, but local officials said there was no damage. Over the past week, at least 5 Russian fuel facilities close to Ukraine's borders and in Crimea have suffered similar attacks, and 2 more drones crashed on the Kremlin roof. Meanwhile, Russia has also launched widespread drone strikes on Ukraine, including on the capital Kiev. Ukrainian officials say 2/3 of the country were targeted. No casualties have been reported yet. A correspondent to Moscow, Johnny Miller, tells us about the latest developments in the war in Ukraine.
Russia continuing the strike. Ukraine also a worrying story of Russia announcing evacuations of civilians in the Zaporozhye region. Now, it's not clear whether this is due to concerns over the nuclear power plant there, or due to concerns of shelling, or due to concerns that Ukraine may have some success in the counteroffensive. So that's an important developing story, and that's the kind of the shadow that's overhanging this war at the moment. Of this Ukrainian counteroffensive that's been expected for months, increasing signs that it may well start, but also comments from both sides. One comment from a Ukrainian general recently trying to downplay the West's hope of huge success in this counteroffensive. So very much both sides at the moment, I think, apprehensive about this counteroffensive starting. And I think many of the strikes that we're seeing from both sides are in relation to preparing or trying to counter this counteroffensive.
Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi says the U.S. has suffered a humiliating defeat in its maximum pressure campaign against Iran. Raisi made the comment in an address to the fifth Export Potential Exhibition of Iran. The president said the country has achieved progress despite sanctions and threats. Raisi said Iranian scientists and industrialists have achieved anything that was banned under the sanctions. He added that economic operators have also circumvented and offset the sanctions regime. The president also talked about the negotiations on the removal of anti-Iran sanctions imposed following the U.S. withdrawal of the 2015 nuclear deal. He said that Tehran has never abandoned the talks, but is not tying the national economy and growth to the political process. Iran's capital, Tehran, is hosting an exhibition on the country's export potentialities. Over 750 domestic companies are present at the fifth exhibition of export capabilities of the Islamic Republic. Representatives from the UAE, Pakistan, Russia, Turkey, and China, and some other countries are among the participants in the event. Our correspondent, Mahdi Abbasian, is at the venue to bring us up to speed with what is going on there. Well, Mahdi, tell us what you have seen today so far, and any noteworthy, I guess, highlights from the conference.
Hi, Kaveh. Today, as you said, the fifth edition of Iran's Export Potential Exhibition is being held in Iranian capital Tehran. In this event, around 750 Iranian companies from different industries, whether it be construction, communication, as well as catering and other industries, they have booths here, and they are presenting their products, and they try to attract the investors' attention. And as you said, there are lots of foreign investors who have participated in this year's exhibition. Nearly from 60 countries, there have been around 1,000 foreign investors, foreign businessmen, who are looking for cooperation with Iranian companies. What I have to mention is that the focus of this very exhibition is on non-oil, exports of Iran. Although Iran is known as a country mainly for its oil exports, however, such exhibitions prove that Iran is strong also in other sectors, in other industries, whatever, you name it. And speaking with foreign investors who have participated in this year's event, most of them are happy to be here, and they just express their satisfaction with the wide variety of products and services that are presented to them here right now. And they see Iran as a strong country, not only in oil sector and oil exports, but also in other sectors such as petrochemicals, as I mentioned, transportation, farming, catering, and so forth. They see Iran as a country that has moved toward development and is now full of potentials of cooperating with other nations, not only regional countries, but also other countries in other continents, to work in other fields, non-oil exports. And this event is a very good opportunity for investors to find new partners and to expand their country's economic ties with Iran. Back to you.
If you can tell us how many days this event is going to last, and what transpires during the days, if you have that itinerary with you.
Actually, this event has started today. The exhibition has started today, and it kicked off with a speech with the speech of Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi, which we have reflected in news. But it will continue for 4 days until Wednesday will be the closing ceremony. Now, delegates from other countries, businessmen from other countries, every day will attend this exhibition. They will hold direct talks with the owners of the businesses, Iranian businesses and companies, and evaluate the opportunities for business development and see if they can find new opportunities to expand their ties with Iranian companies, which I believe, as I've heard from both Iranian businesses as well as the foreign attendees in this exhibition, that they see here as a good place for finding this, a good place for building new relations with Iranian companies, a place that is full of potential. Officials say they expect that around $1 billion worth of, investment is going to be signed in these 4 days in Iran, that foreign countries and foreign companies are going to put their money in Iranian businesses, and then they receive services from Iranian businesses, as I said.
Thank you so much for that. I'm sure we'll be in touch. Mahdi Abdel Aslan there at the side of the venue of Exhibition 2023. Thank you, Mahdi. Iran has executed the ringleader of a separatist group responsible for several terrorist operations in the country. Habib Farajollah Chaab pleaded guilty in court after he was captured in 2020. Gisumi Shahmedi has the details.
Showing absolutely no remorse. These are the confessions of the man that led the Harakat al-Nizal separatist group responsible for several terrorist operations in Iran that left over 450 casualties in a span of 15 years.
According to our plan, our members received military training. That is because we wanted to give the impression that Harakat al-Nizal is strong and can carry out military operations. We even started our activities with an attack on the governor's office inside the city in a residential area.
Based on the theory that the end justifies the means, the Swedish-backed terrorist ringleader masterminded one of the deadliest terror attacks in Iran. In 2018, the attack on a military parade in the southwestern city of Ahvaz killed at least 25 people and injured 70 others, many of which were civilian onlookers.
You could say that all of those who were killed or injured in the attacks were ordinary civilians. We really didn't care. Even many of them were Arabs, and that was okay. We just wanted everyone to know about us. We want people to know Harakat al-Nizal.
The Harakat al-Nizal terror group has been pushing to separate the southwestern province of Khuzestan, which is home to Iran's Arab population.
Arab, Turk, or Persian. We are all Iranians, and we will always remain united.
I took part in this funeral to show my support for the Islamic Republic and our leader Ayatollah Khamenei. We are one, and nobody can divide us.
Today, I came here to send the message that we will always remain united.
Habib Farajollah Chaab, nicknamed Habib Osaivand, head of the terrorist group, was arrested in 2020. He stood trial in 2022, where he pleaded guilty and was convicted and sentenced to death. Iran's Supreme Court upheld the death sentence, and he was executed on May 6. His mission remains a failed plot. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
The Israeli military's blockade of the occupied West Bank city of Ariha is now in its third week. Local media say military checkpoints have been set up by the Israeli army at all the main entrances to the ancient city, also known as Jericho. Israeli forces inspect any vehicle traffic, search Palestinian passengers, and perform identity checks. The city and the adjacent Aqabat Jab refugee camp have also seen deadly Israeli raids in recent weeks. Since the beginning of this year, at least 9 Palestinians have been killed and scores of others injured and arrested by Israeli forces in the city. Well, the piece of breaking news is very important. This is very significant, and it was highly anticipated, and it concerns Syria, where the Arab League, from its spokesman, has said that it has adopted a resolution to readmit Syria into the Arab League. So there you're having the Syria's embraced by the Persian Gulf Arab countries to be solidified with this announcement for Syria to now come back into the fold in the formation of the Arab League. And, of course, that spells lots of opportunities for Syria after beating the war on Syria after 12 years. So that's good news for Syria. The Israeli regime continues with its atrocities against Palestinians. An Israeli settler has shot dead a Palestinian teenager near the city of Afula. 19-year-old Diyar Omari succumbed to his wounds shortly after he was shot. No additional details are available. Earlier on Saturday, a funeral procession was held for two young Palestinians killed by Israeli forces during a raid on a refugee camp near the city of Tulkarm in the occupied West Bank. The two Palestinians were in their 20s. The latest Israeli violence brings the total number of Palestinians killed by the regime in the West Bank area this year to 111. Around 20 of the victims are under 18 years old. Saturday's killings come amid rising tensions in the occupied territories, where Israel has stepped up its crackdown against Palestinians. And that does it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is part of the speech delivered by Ayatollah Khamenei in a meeting with Iranian officials and the ambassadors of Islamic countries on the auspicious occasion of Eid al-Fitr on April 22, 2023. The internal resistance of the Palestinians is the main reason for their progress. The more this resistance increases, the weaker the Zionist regime will become, and the more its disastrous situation can be seen. The desperate situation that the Zionist regime is in today, the Zionist regime's current situation is truly deplorable, is due to the steadfastness of the Palestinian youth. They are accepting the hardships and the dangers. In Quds, we see a large gathering of people taking part in spiritual retreats. The young people in different cities of the West Bank stand in front of the armed, vicious Zionist soldiers. They make sacrifices and they move forward. They have moved forward up until now, and it will continue to be the same. I believe that today the Zionist regime's power of deterrence has come to an end. This is what Ben-Gurion, one of the main founders and the former prime minister of the Zionist regime, had warned of decades ago, perhaps 60 years ago. He said that the regime would start to have problems whenever its power of deterrence ended. Today their power of deterrence has finished, or is near its end.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
They know and realize this themselves, that their collapse and dissolution are near. This is again due to the blessings of the Resistance Front. It is due to the blessing of the Palestinian youth who have been able to continuously weaken, reduce, and destroy their enemy's power of deterrence. So, what should the Islamic world strategy be regarding Palestine? Today, the Islamic world strategy regarding Palestine should be to help the forces inside that country. The Resistance Front's endeavours are, of course, valuable, wherever they are. Just like us, we too are standing up for the Palestinian issue. The Resistance Front's endeavours are valuable. These efforts should be focused on strengthening those who are fighting and risking their lives inside Palestine. The last point is the following. We need to truly pay attention to this point. What is the reason for the escalation of the internal struggles in Palestine? It is because of their inclination towards Islam. We had seen what their situation was like before, back when Islamic tendencies weren't popular among Palestinian groups. Now, some were communists and others were not communists, but they weren't Islamic. These developments did not exist.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Russia has accused Ukraine of attacking the Kremlin with drones in a failed assassination attempt to kill President Vladimir Putin, vowing retaliation for what it has called a terrorist attack. Moscow has said the two drones were used in the alleged attack on Putin's residence in the Kremlin's citadel overnight, adding that the drones were disabled by electronic defenses.
It is technically possible. Ukraine has several types of drones that can fit the profile. For example, its newly developed UJ-22 drone can actually fly the distance. It's a commercial drone that they acquired from China. It's Mugin 5 cargo drone, which can be basically purchased online and could be refitted into a military drone. That drone can fly several hundred kilometers, and it was used in previous attacks.
Kremlin statement said, "We regard these actions as a planned terrorist act and an attempt on the president's life carried out on the eve of Victory Day, the May 9 parade, at which the presence of foreign guests is also planned."
And of course, attacks of this kind, if they are in fact carried by Ukrainian military, are meant to keep the Russian military off balance by forcing them to reallocate and rededicate air defense resources to specific places like Moscow, probably at the expense of other regions, including, for example, Russian military inside Ukraine proper that has to have enough air defense and electronic warfare protection.
Separately, the Speaker of Russia's parliament demanded the use of, quote, weapons capable of stopping and destroying the Kiev terrorist regime, response to the alleged attack on Kremlin. However, Ukraine denied any involvement in the alleged drone operation. Kiev has said the attack was, quote, staged by Moscow.
The Russians may try to leverage this narrative around an assassination on Putin to then up their game with regards to pretext to up their game to go after Zelensky himself, but They've been trying to do that anyway since the beginning of the war. There's plenty of reporting that indicates Russian kind of kill teams were out there trying to hunt down both Zelensky and his family. So it's mainly, I think, a rally around the flag effect that the Russians are going for.
Meanwhile, Ukraine says Russia has targeted cities in a new wave of missile strikes and shelling across the country. Officials and media outlets say multiple explosions were heard in the capital, Kiev, and elsewhere. Blasts caused by Russian shelling were also reported in the southern Zaporizhzhia region and the port city of Odessa. Kiev and some central and eastern Ukrainian regions have announced air alerts following the Russian statements accusing Ukraine of attacking the Kremlin. There are now some reports that Ukrainian forces have begun their counterattack in Bakhmut. Russian officials have said Ukraine's counteroffensive against Russia will have no benefit and will only lead to more bloodshed. The U.S. and its allies have put much hope in the offensive. However, leaked documents show Western military officials do not expect Ukraine to regain as much territory. Ukrainian forces have also been using lots of manpower and other resources fighting in Bakhmut. The intensifying crisis comes amid fresh U.S. military aid to Ukraine. The U.S. is sending another $300 million military aid package to Ukraine, including, for the first time, short-range air-launched rockets, deepening its involvement in the war in defiance of repeated warnings by Russia. The package includes Hydra-70 rockets, which are unguided projectiles fired from aircraft. It also includes artillery rounds, 155mm howitzer cannons, anti-tank missiles, and mortars. The Pentagon has also sent at least 20 high-mobility artillery rocket systems, HIMARS, to Ukraine. HIMARS systems, which are made by Lockheed Martin, are intended to be a core component of Ukraine's fighting force in the future. The package brings the total amount of U.S. military aid to about $36 billion. The U.S. is still drawing funds for military assistance to Ukraine from the $45 billion aid package that Congress authorized in December.
Running against Russia, being nasty to Russia, is very popular. But I'll tell you what's not popular. More than 60% of the American people do not like all the money we're spending on Ukraine. And the American media is not reporting that, and it's also not reporting that there's demonstrations are going every weekend in Europe, particularly in Germany. There's a lot of demonstrations, not about the pipeline, against the war, the money that's being spent on Ukraine, and the whole notion of that war, and the whole rationale for the war. And you can almost understand why Biden wanted to keep Germany from having the option to open the pipeline.
The $45 billion is expected to be exhausted by the summer, meaning the White House might ask Congress for more funds soon. The U.S. and its Western allies have kept feeding Ukraine with massive amounts of arms since the start of the war last year. Moscow has time and again warned that military assistance will only prolong the war.
A well-known resistance actor within the Palestinian prisoners movement, Hadar Adnan, has passed away on the 86th day of his hunger strike inside an Israeli prison following two decades of arrests. Hadar spent nearly a fifth of his life behind bars, arrested 12 times by Israeli forces and subjected to over 8 years of captivity. He used hunger strikes to take power back and mobilize the world outside his prison cell in support of the Palestinian prisoners' struggle. Sustained arbitrary arrests and medical neglect led to Khadr's death. The Palestinian Human Rights Organizations Council thus viewed Khadr's killing as premeditated murder by the Israeli regime. Israeli prison services were holding Khadr in solitary confinement and refused his family visitation rights right up to his death. He survived by his wife and 9 children. In his lifetime, Hadar Adnan carried out 6 hunger strikes. His first protest in 2004 lasted 25 days and popularized hunger strikes as an accessible means of resistance within the regime's military prison system. His second hunger strike in 2012, that lasted 66 days, was joined by hundreds of prisoners and triggered an international movement for the freedom of Palestinian prisoners. In 2015, he went on his third hunger strike for 56 days against another administrative detention. In 2017, Hadar was again arrested and went on a 58-day hunger strike. His fifth 25-day-long strike was directed at his penultimate arrest in 2021. During his most recent arrest in February, Israeli forces raided his home and terrorized his family.
Padr was no stranger to civil disobedience, therefore responded by immediately going on an open hunger strike. Israeli prison services retaliated with isolation orders, renewed every 2 weeks without review. He was held under deplorable conditions and was subjected to regular abuses. When Khadr fell seriously ill in April, ISP refused to transfer him to a hospital. Khadr was found unconscious in isolation in Ramallah prison clinic on May 2nd. Using deliberate medical neglect, indefinite isolation, and detention extensions, the regime foresaw and facilitated Khadr's death. He was killed behind the bars, a fate shared by over 233 Palestinian political prisoners. The international community's failure to intervene amplifies past evidence that international law is just a tool for the colonizer regime of Israel, not Palestinians. It shows that the international community aids and abets the Israeli regime's crimes by its deafening silence that today rings loud after the death of Khadr Adnan. Palestinians rallied in Gaza City as shops closed during a general strike following the death of Palestinian hunger striker Khadr Adnan in Israeli custody. In his hometown near Jenin, in the occupied West Bank, Adnan's 9-year-old son, Ali, led a protest march. Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammad Shataya described the death of Adnan, who was arrested in the occupied West Bank, as a deliberate assassination.
The Palestinian cabinet holds the Israeli occupation, the prison authorities, and all its agencies fully accountable for the martyrdom of Khadr Adnan. And we consider this a deliberate assassination by rejecting his request for release, neglecting him medically, and keeping him in his cell despite the seriousness of his health condition.
Also, different Palestinian factions held the regime responsible for his death, saying that Israel will pay dearly for its crime.
The occupation bears full responsibility, and we will carry out our role in confronting those crimes and those assaults, in particular this crime which led to the martyrdom of Sheikh Hero Khadr Adnan.
Gaza-based Hamas resistance movement has also warned that the Israeli crime will not go unanswered. Also, the Fatah movement of President Mahmoud Abbas has called for immediate international action in support of Palestinians languishing in Israeli jails. According to Palestinian Prisoner Society, 4,900 Palestinian detainees are currently in Israeli jails, with 1,000 of them being held in administrative detention without charge. That's the highest number since 2003. People squeezed by inflation and demanding economic justice took to streets across Europe to mark May Day in an outpouring of worker discontent not seen since before the worldwide COVID-19 lockdowns. But what is May Day and why is it celebrated on May 1st? Also referred to as International Workers' Day, people across the world commemorate the contributions of workers and the labor movement on this day. Although observed as an ancient Northern Hemisphere spring festival initially, May 1st became associated with the labor movement in the late 19th century, after trade unions and socialist groups decided to designate it as a day in support of the working class people. The decision was taken in memory of Chicago's Haymarket Affair, which took place on May 4th, 1886, when a violent clash broke out between the police and labor protesters. The incident happened after a bomb went off at Haymarket Square in Chicago, where the police had arrived to break a peaceful rally. Ultimately, 7 police officers were killed and 60 others were injured before the violence ended. It's estimated that 4 to 8 civilians died and 30 to 40 were wounded. Many of the protesters who were demonstrating against workers' rights violations, long work hours,
poor working conditions, low wages, and child labor, were arrested and served terms of life imprisonment, death sentences, and so forth. And those who died were hailed as Haymarket martyrs. The Haymarket affair had a lasting effect on the workers' movement and helped push forward the demands for better working conditions across the world. This year's May Day events unleashed pent-up frustration after 3 years of COVID-19 restrictions. For months, Europe has seen a series of strikes as workers demand higher wages in the face of record-high inflation rates. In the 19-nation eurocurrency zone, the annual inflation rate was at an all-time high of 10.6% in October. It retreated slightly to 10.1% in November, but that was still the second-highest monthly rate since the creation of the euro in 1999. Hundreds of thousands of people massed in cities around France to vent their anger against President Emmanuel Macron's pension reform. Protests took a violent turn as the day progressed, with protesters and security forces clashing. Interior Minister Gerald Darmanin told reporters that at least 108 police officers were wounded, with 291 detained across the country. Protesters threw projectiles at police and broke windows of business buildings, including banks and state agents in Paris. Security forces used tear gas and water cannons in return. Trade unions had called for more than 300 rallies and vowed to continue fighting even after the changes were signed into law. Protests had started largely peacefully, although police in Paris arrested 22 people, while in Lyon, police used tear gas to disperse crowds after bank windows were smashed. Sophie Binet, leader of the CGT union, said Macron's pension reform had left her isolated.
You just have to look at the procession behind. You can see that today is a historic May Day. There hasn't been such an important May Day in France since 1936, so we can't talk about running out of steam. We can't talk about decay. We can see that this day of mobilization is a stinging denial of all the bets made by the government and of the choice that the government was thinking of making to force us to turn the page.
Protesters mobilized against President Emmanuel Macron's recent move to raise the retirement age from 62 to 64. Organizers see pension reform as a threat to hard-fought worker rights, while Macron argues it's economically necessary as the population ages.
Canada and one of the largest industrial actions in the country's history. Some 155,000 public workers are on strike in a dispute with the government over pay. While wages are a primary sticking point, the unions also want remote work included in their collective agreement. Cleaners and cooks, clerks and maintenance workers, tradespeople, Coast Guard search and rescue teams, teachers, firefighters, and workers who process employment insurance, passport applications, and immigration documents have now walked out of their jobs.
And I can tell you that we do not have a tentative agreement. The Public Service Alliance of Canada, 155,000 members, will be on strike as of 12:01 a.m. We will remain at the table. We will remain for as long as it takes during the strike. And we will remain on strike until the government addresses our key issues.
The strike has already disrupted public services in various sectors. Lawyers say the strike has affected everyone from refugee claimants whose hearings are cancelled to sponsored relatives stuck in limbo and from migrant workers to foreign students. The workers' union have failed to reach an agreement with the federal government in an effort to bring the industrial action to an end. On Saturday, the Canadian government negotiators presented the striking public workers with what they called a final offer. The Treasury Board, which oversees public administration, said details are being kept to the negotiating table, but the proposal included an enhanced wage offer and addressed issues including telework, seniority, and contracting. In a statement, the Treasury Board called the offer fair, competitive, and reasonable. The offer, however, has so far failed to bring the strikes to a halt. The workers are escalating their strike action in a bid to block several Canadian ports to pressure the government to get their demands met, including raising wages in line with the cost of living crisis and the soaring inflation. This is while inflation in Canada rose to a peak of more than 8% last June. It is expected to remain above 3% until the fourth quarter of this year. The strikes in Canada come as the country is gripped with an unfathomable economic crisis that includes soaring food insecurity. The chief executive of one of the country's leading food banks, the Daily Bread, said hundreds of thousands of people stream in each month to get food.
We are absolutely in a food crisis in the country and certainly in the city of Toronto. Before the pandemic, we saw about 60,000 clients saying, I'm food insecure. And that number this past March is 270,000. It has escalated by four times, and in a country as wonderful as Canada is, it just shouldn't be that way.
Hetherington said of the newcomers to the 128 food banks across the Toronto area affiliated with the Daily Bread, many have full-time jobs, but still can't make ends meet. Visitors to food banks in other parts of Canada also echo a sense of despair and need, with long queues to get something to eat at food banks. Hetherington said accommodations, both rentals and homes for sales, are out of reach for many Canadians across the country. This comes at a time when a lengthy period of higher rates could force an increasing share of highly indebted Canadians to reset their mortgages at levels that squeeze their finances. But regardless of all the economic hardships the Canadian people are going through, the government of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau spent 1.32% of its GDP on defense in the fiscal year of 2021-2022. Canadian authorities also continue with their pledge to provide Ukraine with military support in its war with Russia. After all, Canada has been one of the most vocal supporters of Ukraine and has provided billions of dollars in financial and military assistance to Kyiv since January 2022. Apart from that, Canada is the sixth largest contributor to NATO's common funded budget by allocating 13.7% of defense spending on major equipment in 2021 and 2022. Canadian authorities claim that the assistance is for Ukraine in what they call its fight for democracy. They, however, know perfectly well that they are using billions of dollars of the Canadian taxpayers' money to inject into a war which does not serve Canada at all and only favors the expansionist policy of the United States. Instead, if this money is allocated to address Canada's internal economic concerns, what else can force more than 150,000 Canadians to walk out of their jobs and call for better pays, which would subsequently disrupt all public services and make public and private sectors dysfunctional?
Voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station. Youth Station.
Islamati, Allah my Lord, His word Quran, His word Quran, Muhammad Prophet, Muhammad Prophet, praise be upon Him, I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salamu alaikum, dear listeners. Hope you all are doing well. You're listening to IRIB English Radio, and this is Youth Station. I'm your host, Hassanain, and we have our sister with us.
Yeah, I am here as well. I'm Asma, and I'm happy to be here again.
Assalamu alaikum, sister.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Hope you're doing well. You good?
Yeah, thank God.
How's life?
Well. Well, life is just like usual. The same drama.
Okay, let's talk about friends. That's an interesting topic, like, you know.
Yeah.
Who do we call friends?
Yeah, who do we call friends? Well, friend is someone. At the very first step, mm-hmm. I do not go for their background. The first thing that happens is that you meet someone. Mm-hmm. You feel like you two hit it off. And then it starts. And then little by little, you start to know them. And once you know them, you would decide.
Like, you know, you feel like, you know, this guy, he's of, you know, my nature.
My type.
So my type. So he becomes my friend.
Yeah. Yeah, so, that's very true.
So it's that's the first step, you know. When you find someone like yourself, you make them your friend. Like, you
so
know.
It starts with an accident.
You know, when you get to know someone and you find him, he has a good humor. You know, he's of your nature.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. But it's still an accident. See, when we go to university, the first day of university or the first day of school, you would see too many people in the same class. But you're not going to be close friend of every single one of those people. Mm-hmm. There comes a single person out of the crowd, and then you just feel like, okay, she is so close to your heart. And that's it.
This is Youth Station, so we're addressing the Muslim youth.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds really good. You know, it's a good topic. But the other way, it's, you know, friends, it's a very sensitive topic.
Of course.
You know, friends are someone who can direct your life.
Exactly.
You know, who can shape your life. Who can shape your future.
They would give you too many things and take too many things from you if they are not good people.
They can make you a better person.
Or change you into the worst.
They can also, you know, make you a worse person.
So we can understand what a sensitive topic it is.
Who do we have as our friends?
Well, just...
Like, who should we make our friends?
Okay, let me think a bit, go for a short break, and then I will tell you.
Sure.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back, dear listeners. And as we are talking about friends, so I asked Sister Esma, who do we choose our friends as to be?
I told you pretty much honestly. When I choose my friends, I do not plan for it. But as we go on...
So according to you, it happens like accidentally.
Accidentally, but according to your points of views and perspectives, see, she says, okay, I like this topic, for example. Mm-hmm. And I say, oh, well, I like that too. Then we go for things together. We do some co-working stuff. And then I understand that, okay, we two can be together, can work properly together. We have same opinions, and many times we can complete each other. So we go on. Mm-hmm. And then little by little, I start to know them as they're being kind, they're being so generous, they're being so passionate people about other human beings. So that would make me even more attached to them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because we have many types of friendships. Sometimes a friend is just a person you're not an enemy with. You know what I mean? Someone whom you are talking to because they're your classmates, because they're your neighbors, because they are in your circle.
Yeah.
So you cannot omit them. But the thing which is, I guess, the main concern of our topic is those friends who are our soulmates.
Right.
Yeah. And
so, yeah, as I mentioned, when we talk about the soulmates, I guess here we have pretty much of choice, you know, mm-hmm. we choose our soulmates.
Yeah.
Because, normal friends, the best friends.
So it happens by time.
Yeah. So normal friends, you know, like casual friends are the people.
They're the commoners.
Yeah. Commoners. Sometimes we don't have any other options. So, you know, maybe our neighbor. So we don't have anyone to play. So, you know, the neighbor's kid comes.
They are
and
there.
He joins us playing, for playing football.
Yes.
So that's why, you know, you don't have someone mm-hmm. he becomes your friend. But sometimes you choose your friend.
Exactly.
Especially you choose your friend. So what should be the standard and what should be the criterion to choose your friend?
A good human being.
Good human being.
And who is a good human being? Well, you help me with that. the good human that I was talking about, of mm-hmm. course, is a believer and has a great faith in Allah. Because throughout the day, when we were talking, when we go to different places, I consider him. So my friend pretty much naturally must be someone like me. Because if she's not like that, then she's not going to tolerate me. You know what I mean? If two people have too much of differences in their belief and in their set of faith or creed, then they're not going to get along. So I guess very quickly you would understand that the person that you are dealing with is your sort of person or not.
Because, you know, even in the Holy Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Who are not of your like. They're
outsiders.
Not, yeah, the outsiders.
Do not take them as your advisors.
Role models
are basically as your secret keepers.
Yeah, secret keepers.
So you do not reveal your secrets to them. Because there comes a time that you see evil from them.
Yeah.
You know, the outsiders. The poison they have in their heart.
Exactly.
You know, it sometimes comes out of their mouth.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what what they conceal in their hearts, is worse than the thing that comes out of their mouth.
Exactly.
And eventually you'll get to know about it.
Yeah, and that is really, really frightening, you know? Somebody you call your friend, and then that person is taking all of your secret, is showing, you know, the beautiful image of themselves in order for you to believe in them, to trust them. And then once you trust them, you give them everything, and then they would keep all of those things, pile them together,
and one day they
would use it against you.
These friends are the most
horrible creatures in the world.
They're hypocrites, you know. It's like a flower with the thorns.
Yeah.
But they just show their petals to you.
Exactly. Beautiful part.
The beautiful part to you. And there are thorns under the petals.
When the time comes, the thorn would show up.
Yeah. So we need to be careful over here.
Mm-hmm.
And, even I've seen sometimes, in my college, I had a few friends and completely opposite to my faith.
Yeah.
I had a few, not friends. They were my classmates. And once they got to know that I'm Shia, from that day.
They stopped talking to you.
No. From that day, it wasn't good between us. Sometimes he used to make fun of me and in the sense, my religion, he had no knowledge about my religion. I tried to let him know about my religion, but,
But sometimes it doesn't work.
Yeah, so it didn't work.
Yeah, and, since we're talking to the youth, and right now in this era, in this modern day, everybody is following the social media, and everywhere there are different people who are trying to be your role models, who are trying to show you the path of life, the way of life. And then we have teenagers, we have youngsters who are not that much experienced to understand the propaganda against it. So I guess it's important for us to even talk about that, because I guess that is also a branch of what we're talking about. So right now, let's go for a break, and then we'll be back in no time, and then we'll catch up the story.
So welcome back, Sister Asma, and you were saying something before the break, so can you please continue?
Yeah, of course. I was talking about the media, and I told you that the verse that you mentioned, which said, do not take the outsiders as your intimate and close people whom you would share all your secrets with.
Okay, what is this whole thing about sharing your secrets? Why is it not recommended to share your secrets with your friends?
Because no matter how close someone is to you, one day after all, they would use that Even if it's not in a horrible way, they would use that against you.
I love it. That's very serious. You know, so someone, you know, one day that guy is not your friend, but he knows all your secrets.
Yeah.
And the worst part, like if he becomes your enemy, he can use your secrets against you.
Unfortunately. And that's so sad. Why human beings should act like that? Because God did not create us to be such horrible creatures. But the human beings are the only creatures in the world who have the ability to turn into angels. And also they have the ability to turn into beasts.
Right.
So this is what we call as the difference between human beings and other creatures. They have this ability of thinking to change themselves into a better one or into the worst one. Yeah.
You know, even, you know, making good friends is a ni'mat. It's a blessing in itself. And the worst part is, you know, when you make good friends and you lose them.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, if I'm not wrong, there's a hadith. Brothers or siblings, brother is like gold. You know, if it breaks... You know, if it's not going well between you guys, if it breaks, you can mold it and then you can, you know, make it one again.
Yeah, yeah.
But friends are
blood
like diamonds.
Blood is thicker than water.
Yeah, but friends are like diamonds.
Yeah.
You know, once it breaks, you know, it's hard that it becomes one again.
Exactly. Yeah. You can find a better one, perhaps. But still, good friends are really, really like diamonds, and we should try to keep them because I guess we have it in our narrations as well. If you have good friends, you have to try to keep them.
Yeah.
Try to keep your good friends.
So the criterion for making good friends is they be a good human being.
Yeah.
With good iman and good akhlaq.
And they should consider Allah because I guess the only thing that differentiates us from horrible creatures is that we believe in God. We have trust in him and we consider him in every step we take. If I'm a person who considers God in her life, I would never hurt someone as long as I know God is watching over me.
Right. That's a very good point, actually. You know, someone who is considerable of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala usually don't get to see any evil from him.
Yeah. And
if he's actually, you know, actually considerate about, if he's actual muttaqi.
There's also another point that I would love to mention, which is about the verse that we have in the Holy Book of Quran that says, "Ya laytani lam attakhidh fulanan wa fulanan khalila." I'm just saying the whole idea behind this verse, which is regret. You know, how bitter is the taste of regret. Try to pick a sort of people in your life who are not going to make you feel that taste, the bitter taste of regret, one day in your life, and specifically in front of Allah, when you are staying there to answer, to pay back. So we should take care from the first step, which is picking the friends. I told you, sometimes it happens so accidentally, but the continuation of the story is not accidental. So you know those people and you choose to be with them. So that is no longer an accident. It's a decision after you know those people.
Right. You know, especially the youth, that we need to choose our friends wisely. And as I mentioned earlier, that, you know, friends are someone who can shape our future and they direct our life. And, you know, we shouldn't blindly trust in any friend.
Exactly.
You know, even if they're soulmates, you know, I'm not trying to say something against our friends, but, you know, we can blindly and completely trust in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But, you know, friends, we shouldn't, like, you know, share our personal secrets because one day our friend can, is no more our friend.
Exactly.
And even, you know, we should try to maintain our friends. That's all we have the time for today. And see you another day. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Islam. Assalamu alaikum, peace be upon you, and welcome to another edition of Eye on Islam, the show where we look at current affairs through an Islamic lens. Each week, we take a look at a story which has a direct relevance to the beautiful religion of Islam, and we break it down from a Muslim perspective for once. Social media has become a huge part of all of our daily lives. Some of the giant brands like Facebook, TikTok, Twitter,